Welcome, welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast, brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com.
Shay, that makes 14 straight Big 12 conference titles for Bill Self. Just how big is this?
Well, for starters, it has never been done in the history of college basketball.
Bringing you all of the KU Jayhawk scoop, straight from the players, coaches, and recruits.
JK, I understand you've got some breaking news for us?
I do. I've just learned that Les Miles and his staff have landed another big recruit.
For all of the latest news, analysis, and discussion, go online to JayhawkSlant.com. Now, here's the staff from Jayhawk Slant.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers back with another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. And this time we finally have the whole gang back together with men's basketball, KU Hoop starting up. We are bringing Shea Wildebor off the injured reserve and bringing him onto the bench. Of course, we'll talk a lot of football with John Kirby, with everything going on with Les Miles' squad. And we're also going to hear from a special guest as David Lawrence joins us. Let's kick this thing off. Let's bring in the crew. Let's welcome back Shay. Shay, man, how are you doing?
Man, I'm doing well. How are you, brother?
I'm good, man. Just trying to stay warm and dry in this suddenly weird weather that we've got going on. It's so foggy out, I couldn't see driving back across the bridge coming home tonight.
Yeah, and I hear 84 tomorrow and then back down to the 40s the rest of the week.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, clearly.
Yeah, we're right where we're supposed to be.
Exactly. John, how are you tonight?
Good. What's up, fellas?
Same old, man. Kemper started school. Tuesday he went back, and he'll go back tomorrow, and then next week he'll do the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then the next week he'll do the Tuesday, Thursday. So kind of getting back into maybe a little bit of a routine, which is nice, a little normalcy.
Yeah, my boys did that.
As a parent, to finally get him into a classroom a little bit.
Oh, get him out. 7 months, get him out.
Hey.
They don't pay me to be a teacher, man. Like, I spent one day going over all this math stuff and was like, I'm out. Open the schools.
That's illegal. You shouldn't be a teacher.
Right? Dude, I'm like, I don't know how to do any of this math. And it's all different math. They do it all different now.
So hold on. Shay, your boy's going every other day? Mine are going every day.
Oh, he goes, so since his last name begins with a W, he's on the B side. So this week he started Tuesday, and he'll go Tuesday, Thursday, and then next week he'll go Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then it'll just keep flipping until the end of the semester, then they'll reevaluate it.
What district is he in, Shay?
He's in Olathe. He's an 8th grader, Oregon Trail.
And Kirby, are your kids in Olathe or Blue Valley District?
Yeah, it's weird, Randy. You know where I live. I'm in Overland Park, but they go to the Olathe school. So,
really?
Yeah. So they're in high school. Shays is in middle school, but it sounds like they must be doing it all different. All I know is this week they went back to school every day, and it's great because they needed to get out of the house.
Yep. I agree.
Now, with everybody getting back in their desks and getting used to being back in the classroom, it's kind of a crazy time. You know, people talking about late night, and it seems like with the weather, it feels about like that time of year. But now we're going to have a virtual late night, kind of like they have hybrid school going on with kids splitting time between home and in the classroom. Shay, are we going to do half a late night at home and then the rest of it in the field house?
Man, you know how long it's been since I've been in the field house. I mean,
it's been a long time.
It seems like forever. Yeah. The virtual thing, man, it's my understanding that a lot of it, I think, has probably already been done, and they'll do like the skits and the scrimmage and like the little skits they do and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's just a weird year. I mean, not being in Allen Fieldhouse, not seeing them, raise the Big 12 banner.
About a year ago at this time, you and I were sitting courtside watching Snoop Dogg.
We were, oh, the money gun.
Yes.
The money gun. Oh, yes. Oh, boy, didn't that bring some controversy up.
So, hey, listen, virtual late night, when do they start camping out for that?
That's what I want to know. Is there a line? I mean, how do I get in line for virtual late night, Shay?
Dude, you guys would, they would probably take you to jail. They would probably take you to jail thinking you're crazy showing up, man. I mean, I'm glad basketball's back. You know, I'm ready for the first game. At least I think I am, but I'm, you know, I just, it's still a little bit weird. I mean, virtual. I can't wait to see how it all goes down. I've checked my computer, make sure I've got the ESPN Plus. I'm all ready to go. So, you know, we'll cover it like we always do. It's just going to, I'm interested to kind of see if there's as much emotion, you know, if the energy is still, I mean, how do you create energy in a building where the energy doesn't exist?
Oh, yeah.
How do you, like the scrimmage, I mean, how do you, I doubt the scrimmage is going to be live. So, I mean, how do you get fired up for something when it's just like you're playing in a ghost town? And they talked kind of about that, and we'll get into that, I'm sure, last week when they met with us, the players. It's like, I mean, they all seem to think that playing in a half-filled arena won't be a problem. I just, you guys, even watching the Chiefs games and stuff, I don't know how. For me, when I was in high school, a big part of it was like the crowd and like getting fired up off them. And I just don't know how they – I'm interested to see how it all works, especially when they go to Orlando. You know, I don't know. I'm ready for that first game in Allen Fieldhouse to see what it looks like, what it feels like, what it sounds like, and just kind of the overall experience, because this is something new for all of us. I mean, it's like nothing we've ever experienced before.
You know, you talk about new experiences, and obviously, I mean, Bill Self had the season opening press conference just here recently, and that was a whole new experience too, just in the fact that everything with that is being done over Zoom. Shay, tell us, you know, what did you learn? And moreover, just what was the whole thing like? Like you said, I mean, it's all brand new. What is that experience like as opposed to sitting in the press room at Allen Fieldhouse?
It's weird. It's weird. You know, I'm sitting in my office, and they, you know, they bring in Bill. And then once Bill's done, you know, they have the Zoom thing, and it says Mitch Lightfoot. And then, you know, when he's done, it's Marcus Garrett. And it's just like, it's a completely different element. You know, but it was good to see the guys. You know, I hadn't seen him since, you know, the last home game in March. I saw him at the Big 12 tournament. They didn't play, but we saw him. But, I mean, it's been a long time. So, I mean, it had a weird feel. You know, they talked about being ready. You know, they talked about how well things are going, how they're being smart, and you know, how they're not around a lot of people and they're wearing the masks. And you know, I kind of got the sense, and there wasn't a ton of talk about this, but you know, you guys last year, you know, going in the tournament, they were the top dog. I mean, they were 1A. You know, they were expected to kind of cruise through the Big 12 tournament and then get the number one overall seed. And
well, yeah, the regular season and the Big 12 tournament were kind of formalities, really.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that they kind of feel like they have some unfinished business. And I get a kick out of this, because if I don't say something on the boards, I get thrown under the bus, and if I do say something, I get laughed at. So I'm just going to say it. I mean, just based on the pictures I saw, all those guys look, I mean, they just look tremendous. I mean, Ochai looks like a dude I wouldn't want to mess with. I mean, he just looked chiseled. David McCormick looks amazing. You know, Marcus Garrett and Mitch Lightfoot look amazing. You know, Silvio
De
Souza
before. How weird is that? I mean, you're talking like you and I go to the, you know, the media day every year, and we get to sit there with the guys around the court and do interviews with them in person, looking at the guys there under the lights in the field house. How weird is it? You're talking about looking at pictures of guys.
Yeah.
Instead of having seen how, I mean, it's just bizarre.
Yeah. It's weird, man. It's not something that I like. It's not something that I hope I have to get used to. But it's just where we're at today in today's society. I mean, that's the way it is. So I'm late night will be cool. I'm looking forward to it Friday night. I'll be in my own little element here like I have been the last 7 months. That's great. But I'm looking forward to getting, when the time comes, to the field house. And whether there's 5,000 or 10,000 or however they decide it, I'm just ready to see some hoops, man, because it's been way too long. No basketball this summer or spring. It was just, you know, it's been nothing. Nothing but just trying to come up with stories and reaching out to as many recruits as you can. And I'm ready to get back on the beat and see how this team performs.
One of the big stories that came out of last week was the announcement that Silvio De Souza was leaving the program. You know, this is obviously, Shay, this is a guy who has been, you know, just surrounded by a lot of talk and discussion ever since he initially committed as a recruit. And now to see him exit like this, I mean, what are your take on the situation?
Yeah, he showed up in, I think, 2017 in December from Florida, IMG Academy, with shorts and a t-shirt. And, you know, I know he had to wait a little bit to get cleared. I think he made his debut against Kansas State, played off and on a little bit that year, was huge. I think Udoka Azubuike went down in the Big 12 tournament, I believe. He came up big, kind of had his coming out party, was huge against Duke, and KU getting to the Final Four. Obviously, the next year he sat out, and it looked like he was going to have to sit out again. You know, then he was cleared to play, and last year it just didn't work. And Randy, I've gone over this 1,000 times. I've got no idea why. I don't know if, you know, last summer he was saying all the right things, doing all the right things. You know, I saw him at Brett Ballard's basketball camp at Washburn, and he was so grateful and so ready to put in the work, and felt like he owed the Kansas people, you know, the best he had, and it never worked. You had the K-State incident. He's out 12 games, doesn't see the court again, and now he's opting out. So
Departure in your opinion? Because think about it. In the last 5 days, the Jayhawks have seen Puka Williams declare that he's opting out. And just a few days prior to that, Silvio De Souza announces that he's out. I mean, these are two really huge losses for both respective programs.
Yeah, I think the Puka one obviously is a little bit bigger, simply because, you know, you can throw in David McCormick or Mitch Lightfoot or Jethro Muscadin. But to your point, you're absolutely correct. I mean, these are huge losses. And he just never got comfortable here. Did all the right things, aside from obviously the incident against K-State. He said all the right things. He was always, and here's this, Randy. I remember too. I think it was 2 years ago, I think, when they had their summer camp. I took Kemper with me, and he was up there playing with Kemper's fidget spinner and like taking photos with Kemper and like high five and like, you know, I signed his shoes and his hat and was just like, I mean, dude, like the type of guy you'd want your daughter to marry.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, it's baffling to me. But the thing is he made this decision, or however it went behind closed doors. It was either made mutually or he made the decision, whatever it is. But, you know, he's gone, and now they've got to move on without him.
You talk about moving on without him. Tell me, you know, right now off the top of your head, what's your starting five for this squad? First guy off the bench, their best option at the six. Oh, and tell me what you think about this squad at this point.
Yeah, man, that's a tough one. I'm going to lead with Marcus Garrett. Obviously, I think that's a no-brainer. I think Ochai Agbaji obviously is a no-brainer. I think David McCormick is a no-brainer. And then I kind of look back at what I had written this past summer when I was kind of doing some things, and I had Bryce Thompson as a starter and Tyon Grant Foster as a starter. But you know what, man, now they're looking back at it. I mean, I could see one of those flipping with Christian Brown. You know, I could see Jalen Wilson, you know, making his way in there. So I'm at a loss, man. I don't know. I mean, I went on record as saying, this summer that it would be Garrett, Agbaji, Thompson, Grant Foster, and David McCormick. So I'll stick with that, but it would not surprise me at all if, you know, if Christian Brown was in there, you know, a Jalen Wilson who missed all of last year, you know, that they'll bring DeJuan Harris off the bench, and whoever doesn't start, you know, they could bring either Jalen Wilson or a Christian Brown off the bench. You'll have a Tristan Inaruna coming off the bench. You know, Mitch Lightfoot, who I think is going to play huge minutes. I mean, he redshirted for a reason. He wanted to play a big role. He knew last year that wouldn't happen. And now it looks like he can come back this year and play next year. So, you know, I expect him.
It's amazing how that's worked out. That's one that I was thinking about the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, he's living the life,
basically,
man.
Basically getting two additional years for the price of one.
Absolutely. And I wrote about that kind of today on the message board when looking at next year, because I know we've got the early signing period coming up, and we can get into that at maybe a different time. But, yeah, I mean, you've got Jethro Muscadin. So, yeah, I mean, Mitch is going to play. And if you ask me, he should. I mean, he sacrificed a lot. The kid bleeds crimson and blue. You know, he's a Jayhawk until the day he dies. You know, I know he's been working on his outside shot. He's added some muscle. He's added some weight. He's put in a ton of work. And
Prison Mitch has put in the work.
Prison Mitch. And I expect this to kind of be, I mean, obviously Garrett will be a leader, but I expect Mitch too to kind of be, you know, this is his team too. I expect him to lead by example. You know, I expect him to have some big moments, and And I think it's going to be a fun year. I mean, you're going to have guys that it might take a little bit of time. Obviously, you've got Bryce Thompson, who's comes in with high expectations. Tyon Grant Foster, who played last year but is still going to make his transition to the Division I level. Jethro Muscadin, who now with the departure of Silvio, could play a bigger role. He didn't play a lot last year with injury. He's long. He needs to add some strength and some weight, but he's got a chance to, be one of those guys. So, yeah, I love the makeup of this team. I think they've got a nice mix of experience coming back and some young guys coming back, and I think it's going to be in a year where there's so many unknowns, I think it's going to be a fun year, man. I think, you have to worry about – I think somebody brought this up, maybe even Coach Self brought it up. If a guy or two gets hit with COVID and you have to quarantine for 14 days, you don't know what's going to happen. You pray that doesn't happen. But if everything runs smoothly, man, I think they've got a chance to be really good, and it's going to be a fun year. I'm ready to get it going.
Shay, last question for you. Let's talk about recruiting. What's the latest with the 2021 class, and what are you hearing in regards to some new names for 2022?
Yeah, Zach Clements obviously is committed. KJ Adams is obviously committed, and there's a number of other guys. Randy, I just Hunter Salas, I don't have a really good feel for right now. I know a lot of people seem to think Kentucky, Carolina, or Creighton. Damian Collins, another 5-star big man out of Texas. Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma. They've offered a couple new guys. Jonas Iaidu, a 7-footer from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Brandon Podzimski, a 6'6 shooting guard from Wisconsin. I know Brandon is in the process of getting a Zoom call set up with the coaching staff. And to be honest with you, Randy, when the early signing period arrives next month, I would be shocked if they added any more than the two guys that they have. I just think that with what they've got coming back likely, and with everything going on right now, I just don't see them adding any more guys unless it unless it happens late, and that's certainly something that could happen late in the process. But right now, I would be really surprised if if they signed more than those two guys during the early signing period. I know Zach's looking forward to signing with Kansas. I know KJ's looking forward to signing with Kansas, and with the fact that all those guys this year can come back, I don't know how it's going to work to where they sign more than a couple guys. It's just one of those situations where
it's just 2020. That's all you have to
that's
say.
It. Yeah. It's 2020, man. It's 2020. If I had more answers, I would definitely, provide them, but I just don't know what's going to happen, man. And in 2022, that's the kind of year I'm looking forward to. I mean, they have got a ton of guys that they've got it, that they're on in that class. They've got Mark Mitchell from Bishop Miege. They've got Amari Bailey, who's really high on Kansas, from Chatsworth, California, a 6'4 shooting guard. Keontae George from Texas, another 5-star kid. Kaysen Wallace, who went from like ranked 85th to 16th in the nation, from Richardson, Texas. Lee Dort, another talented big man. AJ Casey from Chicago. So there's a ton of guys that they're on right now. It's Grady Dick, who's been a longtime Kansas fan, from out at Sunrise Christian Academy in Bel Air, Kansas. So the list in 2022, man, is long. They're going to have a ton of options. They've got guys interested right now, but there's a big difference between interested and actually, having a chance. Hopefully things open up. You can get those guys on campus, and, maybe stuff with the NCAA will be known by then. But right now they're on a ton of guys, and, everybody's interested. Everybody's kind of keeping an open mind and seeing how everything plays out.
Shay, my head is spinning. You've thrown so much stuff down for Kansas basketball fans in such a short amount of time. We appreciate you jumping back on with us. It's great having you back. We will talk to you again soon, man. Thank you very much.
Sounds, fellas. Have a good night.
That's Shay Wildebor, our man on the basketball beat for Jayhawk Slant on this edition of the Inside Slant podcast. Now we're going to switch gears, bring in John Kirby, and we are going to talk about Kansas football. Kirby, our normal, you know, what would be our normal football segment in the on our weekly podcast might be a little bit shorter because of your conversation with David Lawrence, and you guys are going to get deep into KU football and hear DL's thoughts on the program right now. Let's talk about, you know, I alluded to it earlier, talking about the loss of Puka Williams. It was Monday was a rough one with the announcement coming out just right about the time that the Chiefs and Bills kicked off in Buffalo. Puka opting out to go home and take care of his ailing mother. And at same day, the loss of a big commitment for the program on the offensive line that we'll talk about later. First, before we bring in David Lawrence, let me get your thoughts on the loss of Puka Williams. I mean, this is just cataclysmic for this offense.
Yeah, Randy, it's a very unfortunate deal, you know, with his mother. I mean, this is a real deal. You know, it's kind of a disturbing thing. Some of the text and calls I had from people, you know, even people I know that cover other schools or whatever, and they're like, ah, oh, he's opting out of KU. You know, it's kind of a joke. Well, you know, here's the thing. I know enough information on this. It's not a joke. I mean, his mother is not doing well, and he has every right. If it was my mom, I'd probably have done the same thing. Some of the things I've heard, what's going on. So, you know, it's not like he opted out to get out. He opted out to truly go back and be with his family. Puka Williams played hard every snap he had. I mean, if you go back and watch his film and watch his carries, his kick returns, whatever he did, Puka Williams never went half-ass. I mean, he always played hard. So, you know, good kid to be around and talk to. I know he had his, you know, the hiccup in the off season 1 year, and he served his punishment for that. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens to him. I don't know if he just ends up going to the NFL. I don't know if he looks to go back to KU. You know, if he would look to go to another school. But the bottom line is he gave KU everything he had when he was there, and it's a sad situation.
It is. I echo all your comments on that. You know, you and I we've interviewed Puka on a number of occasions face to face before this year, when obviously everything shifted over to virtual. And he always had a smile on his face. He was always willing to talk. Sometimes when you knew it was hard, you know, when nobody necessarily wanted to be in front of a microphone, Puka would give you, he would give you some insight, and he wasn't just recycling platitudes or coach speak, and he was just a really genuine kid, and yeah, all the best to his mother, or to his family. We're gonna miss him, just as a person, you know. I mentioned David Lawrence. He's our one guest this week, and he's one of the best in the business when it comes to Kansas football. I'm gonna turn it back over to Kirby now, and you and David can take over, and we're gonna take fans really in depth this week with our KU football discussion.
Our guest on the Inside Slant Football Podcast is known to any Kansas football fan out there, David Lawrence. How you doing, David?
John, I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. You bet, man. It's been a rough go here, but, you know, we're four games into it. And I want to just open this up and just, hey, give your thoughts on what you've seen so far in the season.
Well, first of all, let me give a shout out to the people that follow this, because I'm right there with you. And you know, as I said many times, you know, anyone can cheer for the team that's winning every week, that doesn't have the issues that we've encountered in trying to develop a program. But for the most part, the people that follow this site, I mean, they've got my heart. I mean, we love Kansas football because it's a part of us for many different reasons. For me, it's, you know, watching a game when I was 10 years old with Riggins and Douglas, and you know, a lot of you are angry, and I get that. I mean, that's the old Glenn Mason. I mean, that's what he wanted. He said, yeah, get angry, get mad, get excited, be happy, but I don't want apathy, you know, so, you know, being angry means that you care, and I get that as well, and understand that, you know, we were ready about 11 years ago for for our program to come back. And it's easy to think of this as an 11-year process, but we haven't quite finished year two. So I mean, I get that, and I do remind fans of that. So forgive me if you you don't want to punch me when I say that, but that's just the reality. You know, this year, not a surprise that, you know, we're having some struggles in different areas. The quarterback position has not solidified itself. Not having spring ball has hurt our offensive line like it has numerous other offensive lines. Okay, I get it. It's a level playing field. But, you know, we've had issues. But as I say on the broadcast all the time, people throw out offensive line and you know, receivers, there's particular receivers that have struggled to block, and tight ends and fullbacks struggling to block at times. So it's a blocking issue on the offensive side. And we haven't seen the quarterback play that we need to have. But I felt that Morgantown, you know, if we can establish winning quarterback play and put it on that team, and I'm not trying to be tough on Kendrick, okay? I love the guy. He's a great leader. He's doing everything he can. But the fact is, you know, we've got to be better at that position. But what was lost a little bit, I mean, I think everyone jumped on the defense, but I really liked our special teams. I thought the coverage units were solid. Puka, which obviously was in the news yesterday, returned a kickoff for a touchdown. But you know what? There was a lot of blocking on that play, okay? Everyone just assumes it's all Puka, and he did run away. But at the end, but there was a lot of blocking on that. The pooch kick was, you know, executed flawlessly. And, you know, there's just a number of guys on the coverage units like Flomo, Florentino, Marlboro, Hunter Kaufman, Tory Lachlan. I mean, those guys, I think, are a step up from what we've seen, because there's always a nucleus of coverage guys, usually, you know, guys that don't play on the first and second team. And this year, you know, I think there's several walk-ons, and you're always encouraged that those guys are doing everything they can to help the team. So, you know, an uptick in special teams, big uptick in defense. And so we've got, you know, to get this offense executing more efficiently, we've got to get passes down the field. As I said throughout the broadcast, our running game is going to pick up as our ability to throw passes down the field. And, you know, we're going to need a quarterback that can make a quick decision, one that can run out of trouble. It's easy to say we need a Todd Reising. That's unfair. We're not going to get Todd Reising. Not for the near future, I don't believe. But he was the magician. You know, if you look at what Todd did in his last year his 08 against South Florida, I don't think we blocked either defensive end the entire night in Tampa. And Todd made not one but two of them miss almost each and every play. And we weren't attacking that offensive line because Todd made them look good. So if we get a, you know, quarterback that can run out of trouble and make some split second, last second decisions, then our offensive line will look better. But the bottom line is what every team is going to do. It'll be interesting to see if K-State, I don't think they'll try to do this because it's not them, but everyone is speeding up, going to a turbo mode offensively, and they're wearing out our defense. You know, no secret that Oklahoma State and West Virginia has done that. I mean, they're averaging between the two of them, I think, 90 snaps against our defense. K-State offense is averaging 60 snaps. So that's a third more game that we went against those teams. And, you know, we might not see as many plays. It doesn't look like it. Who knows? K-State might speed it up. But K-State offense is getting it done with 60 plays. But overall, I want more. I think the big storyline, I think a lot of people in general tend to write us off when, you know, we lost to Coastal, We've lost a couple of games and haven't been as close as what we would like. But we have a lot of football left, and I always give the speech, regardless of a bowl's on the line or not, that the last game of the year is kind of like a final exam. And, you know, last year it was against Baylor, and that didn't work out well. Baylor is pretty good, but I always look at, you know, how you finish up and how this team has improved. And I'll be interested in seeing what Brent Dierman does. I believe in the guy. I really do. But, you know, he certainly is doing everything he can to figure out a way, right? And now with Puka being gone, which is too bad, I feel for his family and his mom. And it sounds like that was the best thing that he needed to do to go be with her. And the reality is, in college football, next man up. And I don't look back. I wish Puka the best, and if he returns, that's great. I'll be all for that, no doubt. But Velton Gardner, and I really like number 20. Daniel Hyshaw, I think, will be we've seen some bits and pieces of him, but he brings a different element, a north-south runner that we really haven't had. And I think they would work together in combination very well. And we'll see what – we'll see the quarterbacks available, first of all. We don't know what that is. I think every week, you know, our opponents are preparing for three different guys. And I'm sure K-State does as well. Coach kind of teased us with several different names and, you know, ended up saying that Kendrick is ready and, you know, but Daniels might be. And then there's Thomas McVitie. He could be. And they each present different things. It was easy to be excited in Waco about Daniels. I mean, because he's a freshman, because he does some things that some of the very best quarterbacks do as far as, you know, being able to throw that deep out pass to get the ball out of his hands. And I think he's pretty fast. And the fact that he's 17, it's easy to overlook some of his mistakes, and he did have some. But I think I noticed Jalen improving as the game went on. So, you know, excited if that happens. And then Thomas McVitie, I mean, he really didn't have a fair shake, right? I mean, the turnovers really shouldn't have been against him. And then he was hurt, and we haven't seen him. So there's just a lot of different options that Kansas could go with. But it needs to be better, right? We all know that the offense needs to be better for us to win a Big 12 game. And we have a defense that's going to give us a shot at winning. I mean, that's the exciting part. And how could we not be excited about that defense? Early in the season, I mean, we started looking at playmakers on the defensive end. And I think we thought it was Drew Prox was going to be a guy. You know, we really didn't know many people in the back end. And Davon Ferguson was just kind of the guy that filled in for Mike Lee and Bryce last year. I mean, we didn't know any more than that. And Elijah Jones has been an out, faced a lot of injuries. And we were counting on Coe Harris as being that guy who's, for the most part, not been available. And now look what we see in the defensive side. I mean, Karan Parenti, certainly the most talented young corner since Akib, in my opinion. Elijah Jones stepped up and had a monster game for Kansas. And then Davon Ferguson and Kenny Logan, pound for pound, the toughest guys that I see on tape, wearing crimson and blue. And, man, they're just flying around making plays. And then Drew Prox, you know, when he's not available for all those weeks, we're skeptical that he's going to be able to play at full speed, because let's face it, you got to play, you know, 100% in this game in the Big 12 or people take advantage of you. And Prox was not good. He was better than good. I thought he really competed and raised havoc everywhere. Nick Channel, I mean, he played a lot more snaps, so he made more plays against Oklahoma State, but I thought he played better in the fewer snaps that he had last week in Morgantown. And then our defensive line, Sampson and Lee, have improved each and every week, along with Bert. And now we've got two stars in the making in Dejon Terry and Marcus Harris. And I know, John, you were at the presser yesterday. And I know, you know, they used to not like people to ask the athletes, how big are you or how fast are you? But Marcus Harris, who runs around out there like a smaller lineman, told us he was 6'3", 286 pounds.
Yeah, he didn't look it. He doesn't look it, does he?
Right? I mean, how could you not be excited about that? So, you know, Kyron's starting to make plays, and we just need him to utilize his speed, right? Because it's something pretty special out there, and it's good to have Kyle back, and Deuce played his best game. So that's just kind of an overview of some of the things to be excited about. They obviously can't be on the field that much, but how about if they were just played 60 snaps in Morgantown? I mean, what's the score there? So, you know, and that's, again, referencing that because that's what K-State runs offensively per game. So, but we've got to maintain the ball longer, get them rest. And John, we know this. No one is consciously letting down at all. And we saw this a lot with Clint's defenses that I think were pretty solid during previous regimes, that eventually, that, you know, when they know that there's really not any way that they can come back and win, just something comes out, like the air comes out, right? You notice that?
Absolutely.
And that's just going to happen naturally, not because they quit trying. They're trying every bit as much, but there's just a little air that goes out, you know, when your offense can't score and then you're down three scores. It's just a human instinct. So I'm excited of, you know, probably more than I've been since the Coastal game, because defensively, Coach Elliott's gang is really playing much better. And then I like Wallace, who wasn't there. But special teams, an uptick.
So, David, I want to talk to you about this a little bit more detail on the offensive line. I mean, over the years, you and I, we always talk offensive line. Maybe it's because you're a former offensive lineman, or maybe because it's always a topic that needs to be discussed, because, you know, the offensive line has been so up and down over the last 10 years. Just what are your detailed thoughts on that line right now? And is this something that can get better over the course of the rest of this season?
It can, you know. Our left tackle can play at the offensive line, and he's just not adjusted to playing the tackle position as much. You know, the Lapetti moving to right tackle for Bostic, I've seen a lot of positives from Bostic. I thought what we did, and I mentioned this in the broadcast, you know, we got beat a lot, but not as much of unblocked players. You know, I thought for the most part we got a hat on a hat. And what we lacked in the first games is just getting fooled by twists and X stunts. And that's a product of not having spring ball. But, you know, can they get tougher? Can they be more determined? Can working on daily fundamentals and coaching and working next to the guys on each side of you, that it takes snaps, it takes reps. And that's why, you know, not having spring ball has hurt them. So yes, they can get better at all those things. You know, stay healthy, and, you know, for the coaching staff to figure out who are our best five and where should they be playing at. But I've seen some improvement. They need to do better. But, you know, so do our tight ends and fullbacks and receivers out there, because, I mean, there's times, if you watch the tape, you know, yeah, our guard didn't finish off that block, but you know what? The tight end didn't come down on the linebacker like he was supposed to. And then our fullback has got to put more into it to, you know, when he pulls down the line, he's got to blow that out or get inside out. So, yes, they can get better, get tougher, be more determined. And, you know, that's what they're working at right now. I mean, I don't know what it's like in practice. I know most of us played for an offensive coordinator or line coach that would you didn't want to do anything. Certainly didn't want to loaf or take a play off because the Sunday, I don't know if they watched tape now Sunday or Monday, but that would not go well. I don't know what kind of, and I don't know the fear element works in today's kids, right? But I know a lot of us were motivated because we knew we had to go to film on Sunday, and we couldn't go if we didn't do X things, like give everything we could, play tough, not give in, take the right lead steps, work together, get up on the linebacker, get to the next level, not get beaten pass pro. I mean, there's just a lot of things. And then, yeah, we can't have the false starts. That's just that's frustrating, right? And, you know, I know it's frustrating to them and the coaching staff, but you just can't give those up. You know, case in point, I've talked about it. You know, the 2007 offensive line, they weren't physically. I mean, we had one NFL player, but the rest of them, they were solid players, but they played together and smart better than any offensive line that I've seen. They just did not make mental mistakes.
You know, David.
So you'd like to.
When you talk about that line, you know, and I've talked about this on the podcast here, I don't know, the last couple ones that we might have done, you bring up that line in 2007 and remember who was around those guys. I mean, you had John Reagan, Ed Warner, Mark Mangino. I mean, you had three O-line guys by trade around that team. And I mean, I really thought that made a difference because those guys, they'd get, number one, they'd get after you, but number two, they knew how to coach an O-line.
Yeah. And I'm sure this coaching staff has some people that, are doing what they can do to make each individual a better player out there. But you're right. I mean, that was certainly a great coaching staff. And we got to coach these guys up and get better. And, you know, we just got to get tougher, I think, as an offensive unit, because I've mentioned the other players as well. And one of the things, by playing two smaller backs, you know, you do enjoy the speed that they bring, but they're just not going to be capable of picking up, you know, the blitzing linebacker or the safety coming off the edge. And so, you know, maybe if we see Hyshaw, or who knows? I mean, Flomo is going to take him on. I'm telling you what, I'm a big fan of this kid. I love his older brother as well. And you watch him on special teams. I mean, he just gives everything he has. But I saw him a little bit in practice. I mean, he's going to take on a linebacker, I can tell you that. So there are some tough kids, and I'm not saying the ones we have aren't tough, but bigger backs, you know, do bring an element of being able to pick up blitzing linebackers better than smaller backs. That's just a fact.
Well, David, as always, you're tremendous. The fans love, you know, hearing what you have to say. All the hardcore fans out there always talk positive of the David Lawrence opinion. So I definitely wanted to have you on, and we're definitely going to do this again.
Well, I think we need to gather together, you know, the people out there that, you know, didn't give up on this team and throw in the towel and stayed together for 11, 12 years. And once we get this program turned around, we should celebrate together and, you know, keep people that jumped on the bandwagon and let them kind of wait for another day, because I do think this, you know, when we get the win, and I think we're going to get one, and who knows? I mean, K-State's tremendous. I just watched the tape of them in TCU, which is interesting. I mean, the national television commentators, and they're really good, but how they were touting up all of TCU's talent and Gary Patterson's coaching ability, and they kind of had to change their language as K-State just took them to the woodshed for much of the game. And they're well coached. But do I think we have a chance? Absolutely we do. And when you have a defense, you always have a chance, right? And that's how I'm looking at it. And special teams play as well, that will have to step up because Kleiman has continued the tradition of special teams at K-State. But figure out a way, get a quarterback in there, move the ball, maintain ball control. And we've got, we didn't talk about Parchman or Stephon, and God bless Stephon. Whatever it's been, I know he wants to be out there, but if he returns to have, you know, one of your best playmakers, one of the best players receiving wise in the Big 12 conference, and all of a sudden, and then to get a quarterback that can, you know, get some balls down the field, this offense could change. So I'm just going to stay with that, but hope Stephon can, you know, get better. Parchment had a solid game, but we do have some guys outside that can give us a chance.
Well, David, we'll see it on Saturday. Maybe we see a little bit different spark on offense. And like I started there a minute ago, I really appreciate you joining us on the Inside Slant podcast, and we're going to have you on again.
All right, John. Rock chalk, baby.
All right, David. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Just an awesome interview there with David Lawrence, one of the truly great Jayhawks and one of the most knowledgeable football guys you're ever going to meet. Between him and BMAC, Brandon McAnderson, if we could get one of them on every week, Kirby, that would be just fine with me. Now, Kirby, you and I were talking off air, and you know, you like some of the things that you saw in the West Virginia game from the Jayhawks, especially from that defense. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I thought the defense, you know, was definitely one of the bright spots. But after a while, you know, it's a tough deal for those guys when they're out there playing 28, 30 more snaps than the other side of the ball. You know, at some point, you're just looking for a little help to get off the field. You know, Randy, the young guys, Marcus Harris, Kenny Logan, Dejon Terry, Deuce Mayberry.
Dejon Terry.
Hey, those guys, Marcus Harris at six tackles, three tackles for a loss. And, you know,
we
always talk about the D linemen, right? We're always at Kansas, man. We're dying to know about O linemen and D linemen. And, you know, they've been so far and few between over the years that, but now, at least on defense, there's some guys you can look at and see where there's a bright future coming down on some of these guys. And the same thing in the secondary. I think the secondary, you know, that those young guys graded out near the top of the defense and the Pro Football Focus rankings. And, you know, they created a couple turnovers. They had some penetration up front. They got a good push on several times.
Well, there was a huge hit talking about the turnover from Denzel Feaster, where he absolutely lit up that West Virginia wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, you saw, and I don't know if it's just, you know, what it was, but you saw some more energy, I thought, the way they came out and played. They were flying around a little bit, and, you know, it was a good game. But again, you still got a lot of young kids out there playing 60, 70 snaps, and at some point they're going to wear down, which is exactly what happened. You know, something else, Randy, special teams. The week before, they graded out at 70.0. I think this time they graded out at 69.7. So, you know, it's nice to see some consistent special teams because they're definitely going to need that on Saturday. But, boy, I don't know what to do with the offense. I really don't.
Kirby, obviously, Sunflower Showdown this Saturday, the matchup in-state rival against Kansas State. This is a game that is really important to a lot of Kansas fans and a lot of people around the state of Kansas. How do you see this game, you know, breaking it down, and how do you see it playing out for the Jayhawks?
Well, Randy, I just posted this, you know, before we did our podcast. I posted something on the message board that, you know, Chris Kleiman, he deserves a lot of credit because when you go back and watch Kansas State, which I went back and watched the TCU game and part of the Oklahoma game again, and, you know, they are not the most talented team on the field, okay? Against Oklahoma, it wasn't even close. Against TCU, I thought TCU was more talented, but Kansas State just finds a way to win. I don't think in their three wins in the Big 12, I don't think they've won the total yard battle, okay? But at the same time, they're plus seven. I think they're fifth in turnover margin in the country. They don't turn it over themselves. They play tremendous special teams. They're defensively, you know, they've got some good guys in good spots. they play a little bit of that bend, don't break, keep everything in front of you, let the opponent at some point make a mistake. And I think in the college game, God, especially this year with offenses being maybe a little behind with COVID and teams not being able to have as much practice under their belt, you know, Kansas State is just, they're trying to keep everything in front of them, and they're going to make the offense just continue to move down the field. And at some point during a game, that offense is going to make two or three mistakes. I mean, again, look at Oklahoma. I think K-State was +4 in that game and had a block punt. I can't remember if they took the block punt for the touchdown or not, but they blocked a punt. And you're sitting here at some point and you go, wow, how did Kansas State just win that game? And they're finding ways to do that, which, I mean, that's coaching. A lot of that is coaching because you are limiting the mistakes. You're making the other guy
yes.
make the mistakes. You're playing high percentage football. And listen to this. I got on Pro Football Focus right before we started the podcast because I'm just amazed again how Kansas State can have such good special teams. And I got on their team special teams ranking for the year so far on PFF is 90.8. That's their.
Oh.
I mean, that is that's off the charts. Now, I haven't gone and looked and seen if that leads the whole country in the PFF special teams chart or not. But, I mean, if there's somebody above that, then they're phenomenal. So their special teams has been good, and they're doing all of the things. You know, Randy, at one point, and I guarantee you, Kansas fans would agree with me on this. When Bill Snyder announced he was leaving, Kansas fans had to sit back and say, okay, they are not going to get some of the breaks that they used to get under Bill Snyder. You know, he had a formula. They played tough. They played physical. They played smart. You know, they were Bill Snyder coach teams. And you're thinking, okay, the next guy that goes in isn't going to have some of the advantages and that special formula that he had. Well, now.
Yeah, nobody expected anybody to be able to duplicate what the Wizard had done.
Well, and I'll guarantee it. Hey, listen, I've talked to hundreds of Kansas fans, and they're like, okay, the next guy isn't going to be able to do what Snyder did. And here you are. Believe it or not, Chris Klieman is doing a lot of the same things. I give a lot of credit to Chris Dawson, who was the strength and conditioning coach when Mark Mangino was here. His teams are always tough. They're always physical. You know, they're around their strength and conditioning coach more than they are their actual coaches. So I've always said, and I've had other guys in the college profession tell me, you take on the identity sometimes of your strength and conditioning coach and his staff because you're around them a lot. So, you know, Kansas State, they're just kind of doing everything right. And when I look at this game, I think if Kansas comes out and plays defensively like they did against West Virginia, they can make things tough on Kansas State because Kansas State is not an explosive team. Now, here's what they will do. They will hit on some big plays, some explosive plays, and I think that's really what saved them. They have had some big plays under that offense. But in terms of just lining up and just beating you and just kind of dominating you on offense, Kansas State hadn't been able to do that much yet. Maybe they will against Kansas. I don't know. You know, the game's on the road. You know, the Jayhawks, we still have questions about what's going on at the quarterback spot. Again, questions are even mounting more each week about the offensive line, if they can get that going. I know David Lawrence said that he thinks that's something that can be fixed. And I'll tell you, when I go back and watch Kansas State on film and I watch Kansas on film, boy, Randy, the one matchup I don't like is Hubert coming off the edge facing Malik Clark. I mean, right now, I've got that as a mismatch. So I think Kansas State, you know, if Kansas can play a solid football game and don't lay the ball on the carpet and don't turn it over and maybe try to get, you know, come out of that thing +1, which is going to be hard against Kansas State, you know, they might be able to hang in there and make it competitive. But I just don't see Kansas finding a way to put up a lot of points. So I'm going to come out and say Kansas State 28, Kansas 10. Hey, last time you and I were pretty close on West Virginia. We about hit it. Matter of fact, I think I had 38-14, and it was 38-17.
You know, yeah, and you did a great job with that one. I know you. I think you see this being a little lower scoring than I do for the Cats. I think Chris Klieman and his squad are going to look to make a statement. This is a year where they have, because of Oklahoma misfiring and Texas struggling a little bit, there is an opportunity. I think the Big 12 is wide open right now for the likes of a K-State, an Oklahoma State, even an Iowa State to have a legitimate chance right now of getting involved in this race. And I think Klieman sees an opportunity. I also, it's a chance to put a stamp on things from the standpoint of in-state recruiting and showing what they're doing and just leaving no doubt. And I expect that to be the way he approaches it, leave no doubt. I think I'm seeing 43-13. And I wish I could say more. I wish I didn't have that feeling. I hope I'm wrong. I would love to see this Kansas offense be able to move the football, to be able to protect whoever is back there at quarterback. Like you said, that kind of continues to evolve. I just, with the loss of Puka Williams and the instability that we've seen on the offensive line, I feel like this couldn't happen at a worse time. And that's kind of the way I see it. You know, we alluded earlier in this edition to the loss of a recruit, you know, the decommitment of Edgar Amaya that also happened on Monday was really a sting for Kansas fans on top of, you know, the loss of Puka Williams that same day. Let's try to wrap this episode of the Inside Slant up with a little bit of positivity, Kirby. Where do you see this staff going next on the recruiting trail, and what's the latest that you're hearing about how they might fill Amaya's spot?
Yeah, you know, Randy, at some point it's going to be nice to stop talking about the 2021 class, right? Because
yes,
every time we're going to talk about the 2021 class, it's probably going to be a kid that's deciding to decommit or leave, because, you know, at one point they were full. I mean, they were maybe one or two spots from being full. So, you know, Edgar Amaya, the word on the street is that his mom really wanted him to stay closer to home. That's what I heard within the first 24 hours of this. But then, you know, you see him tweeting a lot of Colorado stuff. Well, that wouldn't make much sense. But we did hear that the mom is definitely involved. Southern Miss is closer to home. And there was talk that Mississippi State maybe offered behind the scenes, and you know, that's like an hour and a half from his home. But then today, right?
Well, that's what I wondered about too.
Yeah, you know, right before I went on the podcast here, I kind of heard from somebody that, you know, maybe Mississippi State's not on him super hard right now. So, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things. He's gone. I don't see any way. You know, he goes back and picks the Jayhawks. So he's one off the board. Keep an eye on a couple offensive linemen to watch. Torrey Phillips, he's a 6'7", 270-pound offensive lineman. So he was early on, they were forecasting him to Arkansas, but I don't know if Arkansas filled up or started slow playing him. He's from Texarkana. And then another one, Rayvon Brown, a 6'5", 315-pound tackle from Pinson, Alabama. I know the staff was on him pretty hard, like about 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, they were on him pretty hard, and he likes Kansas. So those are a couple guys to watch. You know, they're still going to be out there trying to search for an offensive lineman, and keep an eye on the grad transfer trail. I think they're going to look for that. There's already rumblings going on all over the place that there are offensive linemen out there who are going to leave. They're, you know, even recruits at other positions are going to leave. And how this works, Randy, through the backdoor channels is they got to be careful. These guys that are going to transfer, enter the portal. So they kind of work through their old high school coach or things like that. Mm-hmm. And the coach starts calling some schools to see if they'd be interested. So you're going to see some things shaken out, probably starting here in the next week through the end of the season. I think you're going to see a lot of guys enter the portal. So I think Kansas will look, you know, for maybe one or two spots that they could fill with. They're still going to do it right, and they're committed to building it with high school football players, which I think is the right thing to do. I just wrote a story on Jason Gilliam. He's a defensive back from Georgia. I really like this kid. I do.
I can tell by the things you were saying on the board, you are a fan.
Well, I like him because, you know, he plays corner. So he's got traits. He's got good enough skill set and athleticism to play corner. But I think he's going to be a safety because he's 6'2", a buck 90. And when you look at him,
big kid.
Well, he could get bigger too. And, you know, he can play that hawk because he's got good ball skills. He's physical. He'll come up and hit you. So, and a plus here, he's good friends with Trey Staley. because there's been some talk about Trey Staley. You know, Ole Miss came in and offered. He's getting some other play. There's a little bit of worry there that, you know, would Trey Staley start looking around? Well, this is one of his best buddies. So, you know, maybe that helps Staley stay on if Kansas can get this guy. But, you know, like I said, to start this little segment off, you know, at some point, I hope we can start just talking about 2022 or maybe tracking a grad transfer, because that means everybody is solid. But as long as we keep talking about 2021, there could always be a little bit of bad news that follows.
That's John Kirby, and that will do it for this edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. If you are listening to us and you're not one of our subscribers, hey, welcome to the Jayhawk Slant community. We would love to have you as a member, and there's no better time to subscribe to the site than right now. With the start of men's basketball right over the, you know, just over the horizon, and everything happening with Les Miles' squad on the recruiting trail and following what's going on during this crazy COVID year, there's no better time to get the best insight and analysis in the business from Shea Wildebor and John Kirby on the men's basketball and KU football beats. Check us out on the message boards. Stay up on all the latest there. Be sure and check us out again next week. I'm your host, Randy Withers. We'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.